discussing the appearance of Lord Varaha. And in that we have seen how Swayambhu Manu, who was the first human being, or the first among the human species who appeared in this world, who married Shadarupa Devi. So Swayambhu Manu married Shadarupa Devi, and we notice there that when Brahma, Lord Brahma, asked Swayambhu Manu to rule the planet was gone missing. It wasn't there. So Hiranyaksha, who appeared, took the planet to the bottom of the Garbhodaka ocean and hid it there. And then Brahma's prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to Krishna, and Krishna appeared in the form of Varaha from the nostrils of Lord Brahma, who grew into a huge form as Varaha's form, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Varaha immediately killed Hiranyaksha and saved the earthly planet and put it back into its place. And then Swayambhu Manu and Shadarupa Devi comes there and continue their the process of creation with the help of Brahma. And these are the chapters in the third canto from now on. And in there are a few important topics discussed. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we mentioned before that Bhagavatam has come to this world through two disciplic successions. One starting from Krishna, coming through Brahma, Narada, Vedavyasa Maharshi, Sri Shugan, Sudeva Goswami, Parishit Maharaj, and then through Sudha Goswami and Shavanik Rishi and onwards. That is the Bhagavatam what we are studying. But that's also, Srimad Bhagavatam came from Lord Balaram. There is another disciple succession comes from Lord Balaram, which starts with Balaram and then comes to the four Kumaras. And then, along with the four Kumaras, Maitreya Maharshi, who speaks in the third canto to Uddhava, and also Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, they all took instructions from Adishesha or Sankarshanamurti or Lord Balaram. So from Krishna, there is one disciplic succession of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Lord Balaram, there is another disciplic succession of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is how Srimad Bhagavatam has come to all over the universe, not only in this earthly planet, in the higher planetary systems. Brihaspati took it there, and Uddhava took it there also, in the lower planetary systems, from the four Kumaras, and also from Sankarshanamurti or Balaram, it spread all around. So, like this, Srimad Bhagavatam is everywhere, but in different levels. So, we are discussing that, and in this third canto, the way it is expressed there, is explained it, is that Maitreya Maharshi is talking to Vidura, and the same is being quoted by Sri Shugan or Sukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj, which was compiled by Vedavyasa Maharshi on instructions from Sri Narada Muni or Narada Maharshi. So that is how this background is of this. So here Sri Shugan is saying to Parikshit Maharaj, in discussions between Maitreya Maharshi and Vidura, which happened in Haridwar. And in that discussion, what all topics were discussed, that was quoted by Sukadeva Goswami in this meeting with the Parikshit Maharaj. And that is the background at the moment. So before we, and in this third canto, we have now few important topics. One, Swayambhu Manu's administration of this planet. That's a very important topic, because we are supposed to be human species. So naturally we have an interest how the human species were in the beginning, how they have performed their activities. Secondly, Swayambhu Manu's second daughter, Diviya Putri, she is called Devahuti Devi. He had five children, three daughters and two boys. Akudi, Devahuti and Prasuti, three daughters were born. And Priyavrata and Uthanavada, two boys were born from this marriage between Swayambhu Manu and Shadarupa Devi. So these five children, they ruled the planet in different ways. Out of them, Devahuti Devi was married to Kardama Prajapati. And this Devahuti is married to Kardama Prajapati, and their married life and their Grahastha Ashram. And in that Grahastha Ashram, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna appeared first time as Kapila Maharshi or Kapila Vasudev, or as we call him as Lord Kapila, to instruct this world on the spiritual topics, especially the Bhakti philosophy of Bhakti Margam, Sankhya Margam and Sangha Yogam, all these things, which is generally known as Kapilam. Kapilam means Kapila Maharshi's teachings. And why is this Kapila Maharshi's teaching so important is that Kapila Maharshi explained the principles of these yoga systems in detail in the third canto. Not only that, the Bhakti Margam he has expounded in his Kapila Maharshi's instructions, but he also mentioned how the Sankhya philosophy and Ashtanga Yoga system also may help in certain situations where who are trying to progress on the path of process of Bhakti. All these things comes in the it runs into about 25, chapter 25 to 33, about 7 to 8 chapters it goes on, these teachings of Lord Kapila. So those 8 chapters of the third canto are very, very important, because for a devotee who wants to understand the process of Bhakti as taught by Kapila Vasudev, because Kapila Vasudev is Krishna himself, and in that process of Bhakti Margam or teachings of Lord Kapila, Kapila Vasudev brought out certain points which are very, very relevant to the person who is trying to advance on the process of Bhakti. Bhakti Margam compared to other processes is simple. No doubt about that. It is simple compared to the Jnana Margam. But at the same time, there are problems also in Bhakti Margam. Bhakti Margam is also there are possibilities of faults or mistakes happening there. And if a devotee is not careful about them in his spiritual life, he can also get distracted from the process of Bhakti and get affected by it, and eventually laid back in Krishna consciousness. So for faster progress in spiritual life, especially in the process of Bhakti Margam, Kapila Vasudev has drawn certain guidelines, and he has explained in there what a devotee should take care in his spiritual life. This is the most important thing of the Kapila Vasudev's teachings. Srila Prabhupada printed this book in one form, Teachings of Lord Kapila, solely with this intention that a devotee who is trying to understand this process of Bhakti, pure devotional service or pure Krishna consciousness, he has to safeguard all the time that what is pure Krishna consciousness. To understand that, sometimes it's very difficult. Devotion is always mixed with knowledge. Devotion is mixed with karma. That is how we normally find in this world. But pure devotion, which is beyond knowledge and karma, or beyond jnanam and karma, like Rupa Goswami explains there, anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmad anavratam. It is anavratam. It is not covered by jnanam or karma. Anukulena krishna anushilanam bhakti ruttamam. That is pure devotion. That is when he is serving Krishna with his mind, body and senses in all form, in total surrender to him, unaffected by the science of bhakti or jnanam. That is jnanam or karma. That is pure devotion. So that is sometimes in one verse, Rupa Goswami put it like that. But the explanation of that verse is in this third canto, where Kapila Vasudev expressed that to his own mother, Devahuti Devi, who questioned him about it. So before we go into that is from 25 to 33, the 8 or 9 chapters. We have the life of Kardama Prajavati with wife Devahuti Devi, which is also a very, very nice topic with a lot of instructions to us for those who are trying to advance on the spiritual path. Prior to that, Swayambhava Manu's administration of this world. So these three topics comes from now on, and that is how the third canto finishes. But before we go into Srimad Bhagavatam, we have always to remember certain background of all these things. That generally, when one comes to a spiritual life, at least we can say that the spiritual life begins. When does the spiritual life begin for anybody in this world? In Krishna conscious principles, spiritual life begins for a person when he first pays his obeisances to Krishna. That is the beginning of his spiritual life. Spiritual life begins at that point when he first pays his obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because in our lifetime, at different times in life, we come to understand by Krishna's grace or by the mercy of the great devotee like Srila Prabhupada or somebody like that, we come to understand what is our relationship with Krishna. So in the beginning, we have no knowledge of our relationship with Krishna. We are instructed or we are advised or we are taught by the great personalities and by Krishna himself through Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam that we as living entities, we have a strong relationship with Krishna. And that relationship is revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. So it is at this point that when one pays obeisances to Krishna, he comes to see Krishna in the temple or by listening from Srimad Bhagavatam, he understands about Krishna and he pays his obeisances to Krishna. So generally, that is when our spiritual life begins. So this spiritual life, what we have begun in the beginning, is not completely filled with pure understanding or pure intentions or pure understanding, pure desire to know Krishna. In the beginning, sometimes what happens is, all you can say at this point that one has started his journey back home, back to Krishna. That is all you can say. That the moment one pays obeisances to Krishna, he has started his journey back home, back to Krishna. Krishna is also like that. The great, great acharyas and great devotees who have studied Krishna's personality, how he receives a devotee, they have explained that in different times, in different ways, that as soon as pay your obeisances to Krishna, Namranam sannidhatte satatam abhipurante anabhyarti danam arthan kaman ajasram vidaradi paramananda sandram gatincham. So as soon as one pays his obeisances to Krishna, probably either due to different distress in this material world or due to some problems in this life, one has come to understand that he has to take shelter of Krishna. That is how people come to Krishna consciousness, in often that they get a strong realization in life that everything is not under my control. I have some higher authority above me who is controlling my life in this world in some way or the other, either due to a serious illness in the body. Sometimes one feels totally helpless in this world. That at that time, by good fortune, his mind turns towards Krishna. In some other circumstances, for some other reasons, due to other problems in life, also one's mind may turn to Krishna. So at that time, the desire is not completely free from material desires. The service to Krishna or the devotion is not free from material desires. But still, they come to Krishna with this desire to free themselves from this temporary material suffering or distress what has come to them. That's why it says that Namranam sannidhate satatam abhipurantai anabhyartidanabhyarthan kamanajasram. Generally, people come to Krishna for artham and kamam. Artha kamam is the basis or the beginning of a lot of people's life in Krishna consciousness. So this artha kamam, or for desire for happiness in material world through their economic development or something, some desires, what so many material desires everybody has. So these material desires are there. So therefore they are classified in the Vedic terminology as artham and kamam. So artha kamam is the basis by which one begins one's devotional life. But although a person comes to Krishna with these desires, Krishna's attitude is little different. Krishna is saying, why are you suffering like this with this artham and kamam in this world? Artham and kamam, although it may temporarily relieve your distress, because that's what you wanted for the moment. At the moment, the devotee is thinking that I know what I want. I don't require any advice from Krishna. If Krishna can just help me in my project or in my endeavors, that's enough for me at the moment. That's how much he wants Krishna at that time. But Krishna's kindness goes beyond that. Krishna says, Arthan kamana jasram vidaradi. Then what does he do? Paramananda sandram gadincha. He not only gives these two, but at the same time take this also. What is that third thing he offers? He says, Paramananda sandram gadincha. That the ultimate travel back to the spiritual world, or in other words, in technically called as liberation, also he offers to the devotees. He says to the devotee, that because you had this so much material desires in this world to fulfill your artham and kamam, that is why you are suffering. Rather, you come back to me, come back to the spiritual world and give up all these false, foolish desires in this world to fulfill, and eventually you will not have all this distress what you are experiencing. But at the beginning, the devotees do not know, so he is taking that Arthagama will satisfy my needs for the moment. But Krishna, without any of our knowledge, offers the third thing also. That is the what is known as liberation. Just like if you go to Sainsbury's or Asda, you will see sometimes their advertisement. If you buy two, you get one free. So it is something like that. Krishna is saying that you take artha and kamam from me, but you get liberation also along with it. That is Krishna's offer. So something similar to that. So artha kamam is what devotee wants, but Krishna offers liberation along with it. Because normally what happens is that Krishna's plans work for a long period of time. It is not like our plans in this world. A devotee who has come to Krishna with material desires, in course of time, as and when he hears Srimad Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and in course of time, all his so-called material desires will diminish. And as he gets older and practicing Krishna consciousness over a long period of time, he will also understand that all these so-called plans in this material world has really no meaning. It's only ultimately going to entangle you and takes away your valuable time. One day we have to leave this body anyway. And at the end, at the time of death, all these big projects and plans won't help. That's only one thing that is remaining there, is whatever attachment one has developed for Krishna. So when he comes to that realization, Arthagama will fall back, and the desire for freeing himself from this material existence will get stronger in that person's heart. So this is how that process. Namranam sannidhate saradam avivurandai anabhyartidanabhyarthan kaman ajasram vidarati paramananda sandram gadinja itham nishyeshalabhyo niravadi kabhalaparijado hare tvam kshudramdam shakravadidrumam abhilashadi vyarthamartim vrajoyam. Krishna's position is like that. Krishna is like a parijada flower. Then it'll offer everything what you ask for, plus in addition to that, take this as well. That is Krishna's attitude. So like this, we have come to spiritual life, and in the spiritual life we are trying to develop spiritual understanding of Krishna consciousness in this way. So when we follow this process, generally as we make progress on the spiritual path of Krishna consciousness, we understand that on this journey back to the spiritual world, in our journey back to the spiritual world, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam talks about three paths or three ways to go back to the spiritual world. That is, when we come to that stage of inquiry, when we come to that stage of inquiry to understand how do we go back to the spiritual world. So it is then that Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam talks about three processes or three methods, which is described in detail in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where it is known as the Jnanam, Karmam and Bhakti. This is only three processes. There is no other process. Everything else is either supplementing these three or to help them in developing in one of these processes. So out of these three processes, Jnanam, Karmam and Bhakti, Karma Margam is normally the beginning for most of the people. Karma Margam means that one starts working in this world and one tries to understand the process of karma. And in course of time, one day or the other, he comes to the understanding that no matter how nicely you do karma, karma generally means work. That's what it meant by karma. So one tries to do one's work nicely or try to perform his activities to his best ability, but still, sometime or the other in his lifetime, he comes to the point that it is not working. It doesn't work. If you can think yourself in your own lifetime, you can analyze this and see that karma margam, or one follows the process of karma, at no time you will see that it will come to any perfect stage. It is not possible. The reason for that is that, especially in the case of householders, you can see that they have struggled very hard to develop their economic situation, buying the properties or buying homes, and accumulating wealth for the sake of the family, to help the wife or children or family members, whatever it is. And then at some stage in life, he finds that it brings more problems at some time or the other. Either the children has become independent in their thinking, or they do things which may not be very pleasant to the parents, or or a situation happens that is he feels that, after all, I have worked so hard in my life for the sake of my family. I have done so much for the sake of the society. I have done so much for the nation. I have done this, I have done that. But at the end, he feels that everything has been more or less not very much of a satisfaction to him. This will come. Normally, if a person is a little bit thoughtful and a little bit intelligent, he can analyze his life and see that this is what is the net result of all the karma what we do in this world. The reason for that is, we ourselves, by virtue of creation itself, is that we have these six phases in us of existence. Take birth, grow up for some time, then create byproducts, start dwindling, and then decay and death. So these six, which is known as the Shad Parinama Bhedam in the Shastra, that is how we are created. That is our way of existence in this world. And because we are like that, all our activities also tend to be like that. Just for example, if you build a house, a very, very nice house, with a lot of money and energy we spend to build that, it's not going to last there forever. After some time, it requires so much maintenance. And someday or the other, it will start slowly become decaying, and eventually it will collapse. So nothing in this world will stay forever, for a long period of time. Either it will finish with your death, or it may last a little more time, and then the whole scene will change again. Now, on an individual level, if you take it like this, think about what happens on a national level or on an international level. You can see many, many, many big leaders have come to this world. And in this modern society, where democracy is considered to be the glorious solution to all the problems, the leaders come, they spend 5 years or 10 years in their position, and they have a system of administration, and they try to put all their energy to develop the so-called nation in their own way, which they think is the right way. And they influence the people and the society and everybody in that way. And they try to change, alter the whole scene in their own way. But after 5 or 10 years, people get fed up with them by something they find wrong in them, and they throw them out. And they bring another set there, another group of people. And when they come in, the first thing they do, they undo everything what the others have done. So this is the interesting side of it, that they will make sure that for another 10 years, they have to constantly say that everything was wrong in the last 10 years, what was going on. So one after the other, they start loosening the bolts again. And then retightening starts, another one, scene starts. So from this, what do we learn? We learn only one thing, that those personality who work for 8 or 10 years to build this so-called country in one way, loses everything, and another ideology comes in and starts again. This is true whether it's America or UK or India or anywhere. It's the same thing that's all the time happening. The reason is that the karma by nature itself is like that. Your karma in this world, our karma in this world will not last. And that is the very nature of the karma. Our every activity in this world is like that. But there are some people, no matter how much they do in this world, they never get frustrated. They go on hammering till they die. They will call down to something. They think today that's changed. No, I will try something again tomorrow. And then that doesn't work, we'll try something else tomorrow. This way they will do this whole thing, whole lifetime they keep doing this. But by and large, you can see that most of the people come to this understanding that whether it is in householder life or any other life, this karma has this one problem, that karma will never come to a perfection stage. So therefore, karma is only considered as a stepping stone to jnanam or bhakti. In the Vedic system, it is like that. That karma can help you, it can purify you to help come to the process of jnanam or bhakti. And this karma will help you also in the one most important thing which mentions in the Srimad Bhagavatam, what is known as renunciation. When one gets eventually fed up with this karma in this world, automatically an intelligent, all it is required is you don't have to become renunciate or to develop renunciation. You don't have to go anywhere. All you have to do is to sit at home and think about one's own life in this world. That's enough. You will develop that degree of renunciation required for moving into the process of knowledge or devotion. So that is the good thing, what you can get from karma. Karma will help you to understand, karma will help us to understand that this process of keep on doing things in this world, eventually I'm not getting anywhere. I'm wasting all my lifetime and energy in something which ultimately is not going to be, is going to be temporary. It's never permanent. So this realization will come for that person who is engaged in the material activities for a long period of time. So after that, when he comes to that stage of realization, the very basis for developing knowledge and devotion comes to that person, and that is known as vairagyam or renunciation. So vairagyam is the basis on which these two processes of knowledge and devotion develops. So to develop this detachment or vairagyam in the heart, this process of karma helps. Process of karma makes him realize that vairagyam will eventually come to him without his own being aware of it. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam is particularly developed or particularly compiled by Vedavyasa Maharshi with this whole intention: bhakti, jnanam and vairagyam. These three things should come to a person at some stage in life. The earlier if it comes, it is better. When it is left to a later date, it becomes more difficult. But Vedavyasa Maharshi's intention was bhakti, jnanam and vairagyam should come to a person, and on the platform of renunciation, he will be able to develop that knowledge and through knowledge to devotion at the end. So that is how Atyayasa Karani Karma Padalani. Karma Padalam it is called. Padalam means it's a complicated web, just like the website. It's such a complex thing. Atyayasa Karani Karma Padalani Ajarya Nidhyan Malani Bhode Bhakti Vade Davach Uchita Dhamaya Andikim Thavadam. That the result of this, all this karma is, eventually you will come to the point, bhakti padedava chuchitada mayandikim tavadam, that he will realize that the importance of bhakti or process of devotion, he will come to that. So karma can help one person to move into that path, to the process of bhakti. Karma can also help a person to come to the path of knowledge or developing spiritual knowledge. So jnana vairagyam and bhakti is the three topics that is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is what we are learning all the time through every skandham or every canto. This is the main message Vedavyasa Maharshi has put in. And if you read the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam in Padmapuranam, Skandapuranam and everywhere, this is how Bhagavatam is glorified. That one who wants to develop bhakti, jnanam and vairagyam, they should go through Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is not different from Krishna. Krishna is Srimad Bhagavatam. And the knowledge in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is Bhagavata Swarupi. In other words, there is Krishna's form in a book form is Srimad Bhagavatam. So when we study Srimad Bhagavatam, we have to keep this factor in our mind that what we are trying to achieve is that knowledge in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that devotion in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and through that, come to the understanding of the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. So that is the goal, ultimate goal of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is mentioned very clearly at the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, Vastuvadvadiyam Thamnishtam Kaivalyega Prayojanam, that this is what you will get from Bhagavatam at the end. That one eventually can finish up all your business in this world and go back home, back to Krishna. And that is what Bhagavatam is intended to. Advadiyam tam nishtam kaivalyega prayojanam. Kaivalyam is the ultimate or liberation, freedom from this material existence. Krishna knows that we have gone through, we don't know, because we think that it is some it is some sort of theories that's been built up. Krishna knows that how many births we have gone through, sometimes a cat, sometimes a dog, sometimes this, sometimes that. Fortunately, we don't remember anything, what has happened in our past lives. That's a good thing one way, because if we do remember all our friends and enemies in the last life, what would have happened this life? That enmity, what has been built up in the last life, will continue again in this life, and will go into the next life again. So, in one sense, Krishna has given us this mercy or blessing from Krishna that we forget everything with death. With one, when you change your material body from one body to another, when you change that, you forget everything at that point. So, that is a special mercy of Krishna. But by and large, we have to remember that going through these different bodies all the time is not a very, very pleasant thing. And to get this human form of life, we had, Krishna has shown us a very, very, very special mercy. Krishna has given us that he gave us this human form of life. Because if you read in the Ekadasi Skandam Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says there, Labdhu asadurlabhamidham bahusambhavande manushyam arthadam anityam apihadhirah. That this human life, he says, Krishna says that, is a very, very rare thing. We take it for granted everything. Oh, I got this body now, and I'll die and I'll get another body. No, it's not like that. There is no guarantee that we have another human body waiting for us, or what our position will be. Or if one believes in Vedic literature, or believes in the Vedic science, that after death, or after leaving this body, we have to move into another position. The spirit soul is moving from one body to another. If we accept that principle in our life, then we should be concerned what is going to happen. Not to forget everything, that this life is everything, and forget about the future. That's not a very intelligent thing. That labdhva sudurlabhamidam bahusambhavande manushyam arthadam anityam apihadhira. That Krishna says that I have given this body which is useful for certain purposes. It's not Krishna has designed it, or Krishna has provided it to us for a certain purpose, and it is useful for us. Arthadam anityam abhihadhiraham. Krishna says it's not permanent. Anityam, it is temporary. One has to understand that. But arthadam, it can fulfill certain things. Abhihadhiraham. Turnam padedade anumrutya daval nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvadasyal. What is Krishna says, what can you do with this body? Turnam padedade. Before it falls off, before it drops off one day, which we know it will happen one day or the other, that any person who has lived half of three quarters of his life, he knows that it is coming. Up to that time, a young man is thinking that I will live like this forever. But it is not like that. Once you cross a certain age in life, you realize it, that it is fast approaching, that it's only a few years probably I have in this world. Turnam padedyadin anamurtiyaval nishreyasaya vishaya khalu sarvadasyal. That this body is capable, Krishna says, if it is utilized properly, that it can take you back to the spiritual world and do not have to go through this cycle of birth and death again. So that is what Krishna has offered with this human body as to the human society. So anyway, while discussing the Srimad Bhagavatam, we just thought that we should remember these things in the background of Srimad Bhagavatam, because when we study Srimad Bhagavatam is not simply stories. Stories just to enjoy listening to somebody talking to stories and listen to it. No, Srimad Bhagavatam has a higher goal to bring to the consciousness, to bring to the understanding of the necessity to develop Krishna consciousness and go back home to Krishna. That is the goal. And if that is why it said, Advariyam Tannishtam Kaivalyega Prayojanam. That is the goal. It says at the end, Sudha Goswami says to Shaunaka Rishi, what is the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam? This is the purpose. So, coming to that, so I am going to, we will go back to the story, to this 18th chapter in the third canto, where we are talking about it, that Swayambhu Manu had reigned this world for a very, very long time. How long? That is the question. Swayambhu Manu's ruling of this planet is considered to be somewhere around 71 Chaturyuga. One Chaturyuga is Kritam Trayada Dwabaram Kali. They form one Chaturyuga, or four Yugas. and that is somewhere around 4.32 million years, one Chaturyuga. Similarly, 71 Chaturyugas Swayambhu Manu ruled this planet. So in this 71 Chaturyuga period, when he has ruled, Srimad Bhagavatam says in there about Swayambhu Manu's administration of this planet. Swayambhu Manu and Shalarupa Devi, they were the first emperors or first rulers of this planet who have come to rule the planet according to Brahma's instruction. So, in that long period of time when Swayambhu Manu ruled this planet, Maitreya Maharshi says to Vidura, because this discussion is happening between Vidura and Maitreya Maharshi in Haridwar, Maitreya Maharshi says to Vidura that in this long period of administration, there was not even one day when Swayambhu Manu did not perform his duties. That is how it is said there. He did not perform his duties even, there was not even one day when he did not attend to his duties. That is how Swayambhu Manu's position is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says there, Maitreya Maharshi asks Vidura, and Vidura was surprised, in such a long period of time, he has not even taken one day off, which is a big thing. We have in our 365 days, if you normally calculate how many days we take time off from work, we take all our annual holidays, casual leaves and all the other holidays till we crave we can get something more out of it. Because that is how much our way of life is such that we need, totally want to get out of it. But some people, they are never frustrated. They come weekend, Saturday, Sunday they work and still they are looking for an extra day they can get to work. So that's also there, going on along with this. But when Vidura asked this question, when Maitreya Maharshi said this to Vidura, Vidura wanted to know what was the secret of this Swayambhu Manu's such a good health. He wanted to know that. And there, Maitreya Maharshi says to Vidura like this, Bhautikaschakatha klesham bhadande harisamshayam. That how can any material problems or any diseases or illnesses affect a person who has taken the complete shelter of Krishna? Bhautikaschakatha klesham bhadande harisamshayam. Harisamshayam, he has taken complete shelter of Hari Krishna. With the result was that not even one day Swayambhu Manu has, there is record anywhere, Swayambhu Manu was not available for making the decisions or taking the doing. In other words, what it shows is that although Swayambhu Manu was totally engaged in his activities in this world, his consciousness was so much focused in Krishna, so much focused on Krishna. That is the difference of Swayambhu Manu and the modern administration. Modern administrators, they have no faith in any of these things. After all, they think everything works according to their plans and they manipulate things to suit their own plans, and that is how they are doing their administration. And they also know that in a few years time they are gone anyway, they are not accountable to anybody, so whatever they can do, that they will get away with it. So that was not Swayambhu Manu's time. Swayambhu Manu took the responsibility, not for a short time, 4.32 million years times 71. That is how long Swayambhu Manu ruled this planet. Bhautikaschakatha klesha bhadande harisamshayam. That Maitreya Maharshi, in amazement, told Vidura that a person like Swayambhu Manu, who has taken such a high degree of shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what possibility is there for him to get sick or to be absent from the work? So Vidura was totally amazed by this statement of Swayambhu Manu, because this is the first time he heard that this statement of Maitreya Maharshi, because the first time he heard that Swayambhu Manu had such a personality who, although engaged in the administration of the planet, was completely aloof from that in one sense, that he was so attached to Krishna's lotus feet. So in explanation of this top point, Vidura Maharshi wanted to know from Maitreya Maharshi about the lifestyle of Swayambhu Manu. And that is how it is mentioned there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how Swayambhu Manu lived. Ayadayamastasyasan snabhan sandurayamayam kurvadodhyaya shrinvadodhyaya do vishnu kurvado bruvadakkadaha. that Srimad Bhagavatam says there, Ayodhayamastasya Snabhan Sandarayabhanam. Then if you look into Swayambhuva Manu's life, you can see very, very important point there. What was that? Ayodhayamastasya san. That you cannot see, you cannot find 3 hours of time, more than 3 hours of time, when he was not in relationship with Krishna sometime or the other. That means every 3 hours he had always made sure that he has gone back to some process of devotional service in his life. Either Shrinvato Dhyayato Vishnu Kurvato Prabhadakadaha. That either he executed one of this, Shrinvato, either hear about Krishna, Dhyayato or meditate Krishna's form, Vishnu Kurvato Prabhadakadaha. So there are few things Swayambhuva Manu has performed all the time. And every 3 hours or so, before he could not find more than 3 hours, a time in his lifetime, where he was not engaged in a Krishna consciousness or Krishna consciousness. That is what is expected from a ruler. That he is ruling the planet on the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not that he has been handed over to him on a plate, you do what you like with it. No, that is our attitude. But that's not Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam does not accept that. It says there, Shunyato Dhyayato Vishnu Kuruvato Prabhadakadaha. So, in the 9 processes of devotional service, there are major 9 processes of devotional service. In that, all of these comes in. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Padasevanam Archanam Vandanam Dasyam Sakhyam Atmanivedanam. So, out of these 9 processes of devotional service, of the process of bhakti, and Swayambhuva Manu practiced 4 of them continuously. That is how it says in the Bhagavatam. Shrunvado Dhyayado Vishnu. Sometimes in his Rajasadas, in other words, in his assembly, in the palace, sometimes he has arranged in such a way, there will be somebody there who will sing the glories of Krishna, or who will talk about Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam. And Swayambhuva Manu heard these things from him. That was one of his habits. And after some time, when he has executed his other duties, then he will go back into explaining what he has heard, or he will engage in glorifying the Supreme Lord through Kirtanam, or glory Shrinvado Dhyayado Vishnu, or meditate on Krishna's form. Kurvado Prabhadakadaha. But apart from these 2 things, hearing and also about speaking about Krishna, this Swayambhuva Manu had another extra feature of devotional service, which is not mentioned in any of these 9 processes of devotional service. That is what is more interesting to note there. That in these 9 processes of devotional service, which are classified as a general process of devotional service, divided as Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam, the 9 processes, there is another process which is not normally followed by the devotees, because that requires a very, very, very special skill and very special ability to perform that. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look into that, you will find that there is only gopis of Vrindavanam have done that. Nobody else have done that. That kind of devotional service, or in other words, process of bhakti. Only the gopis have used that in their process of Krishna consciousness. Nobody else has. Generally, you don't find that's being used by anybody else. That is, that when the gopis, when Krishna went away from the rasa dance, Krishna has gone away and gopis started searching for them. When they start searching for them, for quite some time, Krishna went away with Radharani, and so many other gopis did not know where Krishna has gone, nor did they know where Radharani has gone. So at that time they were requesting different plants and trees and creepers. It's all in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, that have you seen Krishna? They were asking the plants. Kachit Tulasi Kalyani, they were asking the Tulsi plants, Kalyani plants, and so many other flower trees, everybody. That have you seen Krishna anywhere? Have you seen our Krishna anywhere? And some of these creepers and plants were in the wind, they were blowing one side or the other. And they thought, they were answering us that they are not seeing Krishna anywhere. This is how the gopis took it. So gopis in that process, in that point, some one gopi got up from there and started saying, I am Krishna, Krishna aham, I am Krishna myself. She started acting. And not only that, she started acting all Krishna's previous pastimes, which she has witnessed and heard, and which she has relished from the other gopis and the cowherd boys. She started acting all of them. This is what she did. Krishna aham. And that is what her mood was. And similarly, they also started acting different activities of Krishna. How Krishna killed Kaliya, serpent, and how Krishna walks, and how Krishna plays the flute, how Krishna sleeps, how Krishna chants, how Krishna does various things. They started acting everything, how Krishna was doing these things. So this is a special type of devotional service, in the sense that the person who does it, he has to become so much in agreement with Krishna's mood. That means he has to absorb totally Krishna's mood and act on that way. Otherwise, if you do it artificially, it will not work. It will not happen. So that is the difficulty. It says in the Bhagavatam, Tada alpigaste yamuna tadamne tavani chakrukila cheshtidani. Gopis were doing this. Tada alpigaste yamuna tadamne. On the banks of the river Yamuna, what did they do? Tavani chakru ukila cheshtidani. They were all the time acting what Krishna was, and that is how they were able to tolerate that separation from Krishna. By acting like Krishna, they were trying to keep the memory of Krishna strongly in their heart. This is how they did that. Tadalpigaste yamuna tadandi. Tavani chakru kila cheshtidani. All the cheshta, all the activities of Krishna, they were following that. So this one particular feature of acting like that is not mentioned in these mind processes. But Swayambhuva Manu did this. Swayambhuva Manu had an attachment for performing all Krishna's pastimes. As much as he likes to do it, he wanted to do it. Because if one can do that with complete identity with Krishna, or Krishna's other members like Sridham, or other Madhumangala, or any of the devotees of Krishna, Sri Narada Muni, and so many other devotees in the Srimad Bhagavatam, if one can identify to such a degree with them in their relationship with Krishna, then that also becomes a process of devotional service. It's also a process of bhakti. So that is why in the olden days, years ago, that the great scholars in the Sanskrit, they took to writing the they wrote so many dramas, poetical dramas, where to their imagination or to their understanding, they were able to present Krishna consciousness so powerfully. And some of them were great devotees of Krishna. They were not just scholars. There are so many scholars in this world. But among scholars who are great devotees of the Supreme Lord, they utilized this ability to write dramas, to present Krishna consciousness so that people, it is a very powerful medium, so that the people will relish that particular activity or particular process of Krishna consciousness. So generally, there was a king in the past who wrote a book called Krishna Giti. Krishna Giti is a song on Krishna, and all Krishna's pastimes, he managed to depict them in Sanskrit language, in verses. He compiled them. He read the Srimad Bhagavatam for, we don't know how many times he read Srimad Bhagavatam. And he read all other pastimes of Krishna from whatever source is available. And he read through them and again thought over it. And because he was a devotee and so absorbed in his thoughts on Krishna, he decided to write it down in his own style. So in that process, when it came to Krishna's appearance in this world, he did not know how to present it even after reading Srimad Bhagavatam. So day and night he was thinking about it. How should I present it in these verses? So knowing very well that he had such a strong desire to see Krishna's appearance in this world, although in the Srimad Bhagavatam it is presented very nicely. Sri Shukan says to Parikshit, Tamal budam balagamam bujekshanam chadurbhujam shangagadharyudhaidam shrivalsalakshmam galashobhikaustubam pidambaram sandrapayodasaubhagam. In so many verses it goes on about Krishna's appearance in the present self. in Kamsa's prison. Vasudev and Devaki were there, and Krishna appeared there in the four-handed form and then changed on to the two-handed baby form. So all that things, he could not put it together properly. So Krishna decided that I rather show it to him. Rather than making him to struggle anymore, I rather show it to him. So in the dreams, in his night, Krishna appeared to him and presented him this whole scene of what happened in the cell of the prison of Kamsa to him. And that long dream lasted from about 10 o'clock in the night up to 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. This whole dream lasted for him. He saw how Krishna appeared in that prison cell, what all happened there. Very, very minute detail was shown to him. So the result was that in the morning when he got up from his bed, this whole scene is in his head and he could not resist from writing it down straight away. And after compiling this, he developed a drama troupe after that to present that. And this drama troupe continued, and generally they performed in the temples. These shows normally start at night after the deity has been put to rest, say about 9:30 or 10 o'clock, when the last offering is over and all the devotees have paid their obeisances to Krishna. And Krishna has been put to rest by the head pujari or priest, and the deity doors are closed. It is then this drama begins. Drama, so naturally you can imagine, it's about 10 o'clock it starts. And it finishes somewhere around 3 o'clock in the morning, because by 3 o'clock the next day starts for Krishna again. The pujari comes in and opens the deity door, and by then hundreds and thousands of devotees are flocking in to see Krishna once again the next day to start with to see the Lord in the temple. So in between that short span between 10 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the morning, these dramas are normally played. So in this drama, generally there will be a lot of people trained up, and because he was the king and he owned the temple at that time and he had sufficient resources, he managed to take young children and young boys and were trained up very nicely. In those days, the particular education didn't mean that going to schools and colleges and universities and getting a degree and getting a job. That was not considered to be education at all. It didn't exist, that kind of education. Education was primarily intended for studying the scriptures and advancing on Krishna consciousness. That was what education meant for. All other education was considered simply as a livelihood. So this king was so much a devotee that he decided to pick the young boys and train them up in these things. And he will make sure that because he had the resources, and more than anything else, he had the devotion to Krishna, that nothing in this world mattered very much for him. All that mattered to him was this drama troupe should perform these dramas nicely, and I would like to watch it during the night. That was his desire. So because it was such a classic and masterpiece of him, that little by little this effort by the king started becoming more popular. And this drama troupe started performing these dramas at night. Every night, at after 10 o'clock it began and finishes at 3 o'clock in the morning. So this continued performance of drama, it gone through whole year. So in other words, if you come to the morning for darshan of the deity at 3 o'clock in the morning, you have a whole day right up to 10 o'clock in your Krishna consciousness. And in the night, you are offered this facility as well. So in other words, not one second you can forget Krishna in that condition. That is the benefit. Between 12:30 or 1 o'clock after the midday offering, right up to 4:30 in the afternoon, the deity room is closed. Continuous lectures on Srimad Bhagavatam goes on. So where is the time to think about anything else in this world, except to think about Krishna or Krishna's activity? So it was so nicely designed, this whole system. So once it so happened that this drama was being played at night, in the night, this particular pastimes of Krishna, especially after birth, the cowherd women or the gopis, as we call it, gopis is a better word, the gopis were coming to see Krishna after birth. And they were bringing a lot of presents with them. The gopas or the cowherd men, they were also bringing the presents to see Krishna. And that festival is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which lasted for about 6 days. That is how Bhagavatam says. And then in that same drama, in that particular day, they also showed some of Krishna's childhood pastimes. And it all requires a tremendous effort to properly act and to bring all the mellows and rasas within that into the face of these actors who are trained for years and years. Something like 7 to 8 years of training is minimum necessary to come to some, to bring them onto the stage before they start acting. So you can imagine, they have been taken in at about 4 or 5, and it's only about 13 or 14. They are trained enough to act properly and bring these dresses on the face. So it was happening like that one day. And in this particular scene, when Krishna was presented with flowers and so many yogurt and butter and cheese and everything, it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, everything in detail. After all that was over, some of Krishna's childhood pastimes were shown. So one particular day when this was being played, and Krishna decided that he should come and play that himself. From the Daichi room, he came out and he decided that I should play this role today, because all the old memories came up to him. In his mind, he started thinking all what happened 4,000 or 5,000 years ago in Vrindavan, in the younger days in Mother Yashoda's and Nanda Maharaj's home, all what happened, all his memories surged forward in Krishna's mind. And Krishna decided that I should do that today myself. And this particular person, or this boy, who was trained up to do that, he could not come to play that. Somehow it so happened that in the dressing room, he fell down asleep in one corner and he slept there. He didn't turn up for the show. He had to sleep, and nobody else noticed that. At the time when the show started, Krishna was present there among all the other boys, exactly as another actor in that role he played that day. So when this was happening, all the audience who were sitting there, they really found that day a marked difference in the acting. They could notice it. And not only that, because of the very presence of the Supreme Lord there, who was present there to play this role, all the other actors who were present there, they also became very joyful. That is natural, because Krishna by nature is Sachidanandam, eternal blissful and knowledge. That is Krishna's nature. And anybody who comes into contact or association with Krishna automatically will develop that happiness from Krishna, will come to him. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, it says that when Krishna's appearance, all that was happening, the changes in the nature, the changes in the consciousness of the people in Vrindavanam, and all that is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So same thing, when Krishna appeared on the scene, nobody noticed that it was someone different from the boy who was supposed to play that role. So the whole scene went on, and the person who wrote the drama, he was watching this, sitting there in the front. And next to him, Vilumangalam was sitting there. Vilumangalam also was sitting next to him. Together they were sitting and watching this drama. But who spotted that? Vilumangalam spotted that. Vilumangalam found that this is not the devotee who has dressed up like Krishna. This is Krishna himself. Vilumangalam mentioned that to the king, that look at this. This is that Krishna who has come from inside now, from the temple room. He has, from the deity room, he has come out. And as soon as Vilumangalam said this, the king who was watching this, he touched Vilumangalam's hand and he could see the Supreme Personality of Godhead there in Krishna's role there. Unable to control himself, king went up to him and grabbed Krishna. While grabbing him, Krishna escaped. In that process, he got his peacock feather from head. It fell off and he took it. He ran after Krishna, but Krishna was not there. It was gone. And they could not understand. When they looked for Krishna, they went back into the dressing room. They saw the body person sleeping there. The little boy was sleeping there in the dressing room. And that day, it became so important for that king. He took that. He took that peacock feather, kept it with him. For hundreds of years, that family worshipped that peacock feather at home. And then one day, in a serious fire that happened, the whole palace caught fire, and in that the peacock feather also disappeared. That is what happened. So, what I'm trying to say is that when Krishna enjoys something, he doesn't want to stay out of it. Our Krishna is different than all other demigods. Krishna has a different personality. Alangara Priyo Krishna. Nobody else enjoys all these things more than Krishna. So Krishna has moved away from that and gone back to the temple room, back again into his normal position. It's a little boy with his lute in the hand, button in the hand, and with the with the peacock feather, he was standing in the temple room, readily dressed to receive the devotees again the next day morning. So that has happened once. So what I'm saying is, Tadalpigaste yamuna tadandi tamani chakrukila cheshtidani. That Swayambhu Manu had this one particular nature. That Swayambhu Manu's life was that Swayambhu Manu understood this technique very well. Therefore, he used that technique in his spiritual life, in Krishna consciousness. Ordinary people, if they try to do it, it will become very, very difficult. Only very, very elevated personalities can understand this. This identification of Krishna's different pastimes and act it in such a way to please the Supreme Lord. So Swayambhu Manu had one good quality, that he understood that I can combine all these things into one. How did he do that? That means hearing, remembering, and shravanam smaranam, glorifying, kirtanam, and kathanam, speaking. All these four things, shravanam, kathanam, smaranam, and kirtanam, four things he combined into one. How did he do that? When, if you speak from Srimad Bhagavatam, anything, when you are trying to present Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam, normally a person who has studied Srimad Bhagavatam, automatically all the scenes of Srimad Bhagavatam will come through his mind when he is talking from Srimad Bhagavatam. They will follow one after the other. And that is a natural thing. It will come. And when these things come, it automatically becomes the smaranam or the remembrance process. So you are speaking at the same time, which is known as kathanam, and you are also remembering at the same time, because these pastimes has to come to you in its reality, in its true form, as it is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, to present it to somebody else. So kathanam and smaranam goes on at the same time. And when you are smaranam, remembrance is going on, kathanam and smaranam is going on, automatically there is one person who is sitting inside, who is hearing everything what you have spoken. And that is the super soul inside. Krishna is present there in everyone's heart. It is present in the speaker, it's present in the listener also. So it is he who actually says that what is spoken is proper or not proper, or what is spoken is nice or not nice. So he decides that. It is the super soul. Krishna is present within the heart. He tells the speaker or he tells the listener that that particular pastime of Krishna, what was described, is very, very nice. Or it required a little bit more changes. Whatever it is, a proper commentary on that comes from the super soul within the heart. So, kathanam, smaranam, and shravanam. Shravanam happens automatically. When you are speaking, you are hearing that as well. He hears that inside. And so, all these things automatically happens the same time. And this is how Swayambhu Manu ruled this planet. That is why it says there, Ayadayamastasyasan snavan swandarayabana shrunvato dhyayato Vishnu kurvato bruvadakaraha. That this, all these qualities, Maitreya Maharshi says to Vidura, was there in Swayambhu Manu. And you can imagine a king who is like in this consciousness, what will be the situation of the subjects, what will be the condition of the people who are ruled by that king. Naturally, their mind cannot turn away from Krishna consciousness. If the leader follows the right path of Krishna consciousness, automatically that influence of the leader on the people will be also very, very powerful. And Swayambhu Manu made sure that he made all possibilities, facilities for the people who wanted to execute Krishna consciousness. Shrunado dhyayado Vishnu kurvato bruvadakaraha. So those days people went to Swayambhu Manu's palace to hear about Krishna. Nowadays we go to the palace for what? To take all our problems there. That's what we have to go for. But Shrunado dhyayado Vishnu kurvato bruvadakaraha. that Srimad Bhagavatam says there that this is how it happens. Now, this thing has happened how many millions of years, I don't know, can calculate. So many millions of years, this Sangho Manu's ruling has happened. This incident in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while explaining Maitreya Maharshi to Vidura, later on, when Bhagavatam was studied by other personalities, they also picked up this point from there. That Bhaudiyaschakathaklesha Bhadande Hari Samshayam. How can one suffer in this world if he is constantly engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord Krishna? How can it disturb him in his life? This is what Maitreya Maharshi said to Vidura. So, these stories have happened long ago in Swayambhu Manu's time. But if you look back in the recent times even, not long ago, even 500 to 1000 years time in the history, when some of the major commentators on the Srimad Bhagavatam also, they learned this technique from Swayambhu Manu. You can see from their practical life. Sridharajari Swamiji, whose commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, known as Bhavartha Deepika, which was compiled in Benares, it is the commentary on the Bhagavatam which Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted in complete. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will not accept any other commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam as much as he accepted Sridharajari Swamiji's commentary of Bhavartha Deepika. So, this personality, Sridharajari Swamiji, when he lived in Benares, he suffered heavily through various illnesses. His body was subjected to so many illnesses apart from after leaving home, he came to Benares. It is where, in the temple of Bindumadhava, that he compiled this commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. And when Bhavartha Deepika was compiled, he was going through a very, very, very hard time. So many physical problems, physical difficulties was disturbing his life, in compiling this commentary. But there is a reference to that in his own servant who was helping him, that all these things were going on. At the same time, he was able to write his commentary. How? Bhaudigaschakathaklesham Bhadande Hari Samshayam. If you take complete shelter, generally, when we are sick, normally, if you look normally in this world, when people get sick, they will say like this. They will say, there is no point in serving Krishna. What you require is very first class medicine. That is what some people will say like that. You can go and pray in the temple, but that's not going to solve the problem. They will say like this. They will say, take first class medicine and very strong medicine. That alone can cure. There is one group of people who talk like that. Then there is another group of people who will say, you have to pray to Krishna, but at the same time you have to take the medicine as well. In other words, according to that, we all belong to that category, most of us, I would say, that we should take medicine, but at the same time, we should pray to Krishna also for some relief, to get this body back to normal. Because when you get older, and when the body starts giving pains and aches and all other associated problems, even normal routine life gets sometimes difficult. That all the early days in life, we were busy with so many other activities, like Ajari Swamiji says there that Balastaval Krida Asaktam. Childhood was busy in playing. There was no time to think about Krishna or any other spiritual life. There was no knowledge and there was no desire in them. Balastaval Krida Asaktam. Tarunastaval Taruni Asaktam. And when you became a young man or a young woman, all that was boiling in the mind was how to associate with the opposite side. That is natural because the rajogunam or the mood of passion builds up in the teenage life. And then it takes away whatever satvogunam or illumination was there is completely covered by rajogunam and tamogunam. Balastaval krida asakta, tarunastaval taruni sakta. So at that time the attraction is for the opposite side. Tarunastaval taruni sakta, vruddhastaval chinda asakta. And after everything is over, when you get to the old age, till now we have not touched the Srimad Bhagavatam, nor I have touched the beads, but I never chanted the holy name of the Lord. And I am thinking that at the age of 60 or 65, after I have retired, the family is all settled, I will start my spiritual life. What spiritual life can you start at that time? The body won't allow anybody to do anything, even if you want to do it. That at that time, all that is coming back is all the old thoughts of enjoyment what one had in his life, in the childhood, in the youth, and so many, all his business life or working life or whatever life one had, all that life will come back. It's seen after the scene, it will come in the frame and stand there. Vruddhastaval chindasaktaha. Chindasakta or chindamagnada is the quality of the old age. That is what Acharya Swamiji says. So, pare brahmani kopina sakta. There is no time to think about Krishna at that time. So, anyway, in the modern days also, those acharyas or those great devotees who have taken Srimad Bhagavatam into their life, they have followed this understanding that even after we were talking about. So, these are the two classes. One who believes strongly in the medicine. Another one who believes 50% medicine, 50% Krishna. But actually, if one is totally sincere, Swayambhu Manu's life and all these great scholars or devotees, their life is pointing out to us only one thing, that Krishna alone is sufficient, even if one gets ill or one gets sick. Unfortunately, because we do not have that faith and strength or sincerity in our mind or in our heart, we have to stay back with this position of medicine and Krishna. And that is how these three categories of people in this world have come about. But great devotees or great devotees who have taken complete shelter of Krishna, they knew that bhaudigaschakathaklesham bhadande harisamshrayam. If you have taken complete shelter of Krishna, what material problems, what three modes of material nature can disturb me? They are asking this question. Maitreya Maharshi said this to Vidura. So this has happened in the olden days, and in the recent times also this has happened. But then the question comes, if we talk about all these great scholars, devotees, Sridharacharya Swamiji. Who was Sridharacharya Swamiji? Sridharacharya Swamiji was Muchukunda himself has come. So he is, in other words, he was already a great personality. So then it becomes a bit difficult. We can say that, oh, such personalities can do that, but ordinary people like us, how can we do that? This question comes, isn't it? Automatically we start thinking that Sridharacharya Swamiji was an incarnation of Muchukunda. So Muchukunda already has met with Krishna, and Krishna has given him enough mercy before. And it was from Krishna's request that he has to come as Sridharacharya Swamiji. So he had to appear like that. But today, it is not so. Today the situation is different. Because in today's world, we have to see somebody, one among us, if we may become like that. Then that is something much more, it is much more significant in the sense, it draws our attention that it can happen even today. And Krishna, at different times in the history, has shown that all these different types of processes of devotional service are all equally powerful and equally successful. Once upon a time, for paying obeisances, Krishna sent a devotee back to the spiritual world. Ardhartena harim prasannamagarol avtanabadashishu saptahena parichityadabala yamardhada pingalah khatvango ghadiya navadipraedidannavetam karunyamidim prabhanna sharanam sheshayusha toshayem. One brahmana at the old age of 90 continuously engaged in sense gratification throughout life, at the end repented so much, and his repentance was so strong in his head that before he leaving his body, he fell down in front of Krishna and told him this verse. This verse is known from that. Abdha ardhena harim prasanna magarol autana vada shishu. He said to Krishna, my dear Krishna, he said to him, addressed him like this and said to him, Abdha ardhena harim prasanna magarol autana vada shishu. Who is Uttana Vada Shishu? Uttana Vada's son is Dhruva Maharaj. What did Dhruva Maharaj do? It took him 6 months of time to please Krishna. That is how much Dhruva Maharaj has taken to please Krishna. Abdha ardhena harim prasanna magarol autana vada shishu. Then saptahena parichit. Parichit Maharaj took how much time? He took 7 days time. It is 7 days of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam that took him back to the spiritual world. Saptahena parichit abalayam ardhada pingala. There is a personality in the Srimad Bhagavatam among the 24 spiritual masters known as Pingala. Pingala was a prostitute who lived in Mithila, in Mithila, and her activities were so sinful that one day she came to her senses, and one evening, that is a long story, it is in the Bhagavatam, among the 24 spiritual masters, Pingala is one of the spiritual masters. Prithivi Vayurakasham Abhogni Chandrama and Ravi Kapoda Majagara Sindhu Patanga Madhugarbhaja Madhuha Harina Meena Pingala Kuraram Arbhaga Kumari Sharavel Sarpam Urnanabha Subhayashangal. Then Pingala, prostitute, comes there. So we will discuss Pingala's whole activities when we come to the 24 spiritual masters. But for the moment we'll say that Pingala was leading a very sinful life. And the result of that was, one evening, by some mercy of the Dattatreya Rishi, Pingala came to her senses. And with the result was that Pingala sensed that what a life I have led. Simply from repenting that, at that very night, Pingala thought of, what have I done here? This is the place where Sita Devi had lived or was born, who took her appearance in this world. And in this most auspicious place, what kind of life have I led? This made Pingala to repent so much. Sita Devi, who represented the whole womanhood in this world. And this is where Lord Ramachandra married Sita Devi. This is where Lord Ramachandra and Sita Devi walked on the streets of Mithila. And it is here that I have engaged in this such abominable activities. I have tried to acquire wealth through such immoral means. Pingala came to her senses one night, and simply thinking about Lord Ramachandra, she gave up her body. And it only took about 2 or 3 hours for her. That is what it says in the verse. Saptahena parishid abala yamardhara pingala. Pingala took only a very, very short time to leave her body and go back into the spiritual world. Khatwango khatiga navadiprayo vidanavyadeyam. King Khatwanga, he fought the war in the heavenly planets, and he was assisting the demigods in their fight against the demons. But when he came down, when he asked after the war was over, how much time have I left in this body? The demigods told him that he hasn't got much time, and rather if he has, whatever time he was given to him was so short. Khatwanga immediately came down to this world to surrender to Krishna. That is how it is mentioned there. Khatwango Khadiga Doedi. Very, very short time King Khatwanga got it, and he utilized it for going back to the spiritual world. And the Brahmana said to Krishna, what did he say? Saptahena parichida balaya amardhana pingala Khatwango Khadiga Navadiprayo vidanavyadeyam. I am 90 years old, the Brahmana said to Krishna. And today, I have no energy left in my body because I have spent all my lifetime in different sense gratification. But one thing I know, even if I have got a few minutes from now on, my lifetime, tam karunyamidim prabanna sharanam shesha yusha toshayem. Whatever little few minutes I have left in my lifetime, let me offer that time to you. Saying this, he paid his obeisances to Krishna and went back to the spiritual world. So this has happened in recent times. It's not happened very long ago, a few hundred years ago. All these things have happened in the life of devotees. But as I said before, that all the 9 proso devotional service, you will see that when you come to Kadama Prajapati's life, he followed one particular type of devotional service, which he liked it. He took to it very seriously. And similarly, there are many, many, many personalities in the past who followed one of these processes very seriously. So, in that process, not long ago, there was a devotee who actually was engaged in Krishna consciousness in his own peculiar style, in the sense that he had a strong desire for cultivating Krishna consciousness. This has somehow developed in him in the early days in life. After all our propensities and vasanas and all our desires, it's a follow-up of our past life. It's coming through our consciousness. And that you can see all the great sages or all the personalities in this world who are jnanis or yogis or devotees, they all have something that is following them from their previous lives. It's not that everything has automatically spurred it up this lifetime. Whether you can look into any of the great personalities, you will see that their knowledge and then their yogic potencies or yogic powers, this is all a continuation of the where they have developed in their previous lives. Krishna also confirms that it never is lost. All the yoga systems generally, Krishna's arrangement is such that you continue in one body, and if you have executed Krishna consciousness, you take it from there in the next life. So the knowledge that comes is also like that. To a large extent, knowledge also stays like that. That is why at the early age in life itself, some people you will find that they have not much interest in this material world. Why? Because already in their previous lives they had such such good fortune of developing spiritual knowledge early life itself that they were able to take to it like it is such an easy task for them. So in that situation, one Brahmana boy, he at early age itself he had a strong attachment for Krishna. So he left home and not much interested, such a degree of renunciation also he had. He started travelling through all the holy places in Bharatavarsham. He went to Haridwar, Hrishikesh, Badrinath, Kedarnath, Vrindavanam. Everywhere he wandered around Dwaraka, Jagannathpuri. No places where he hasn't visited. Everywhere he will go, spend a few days, and then he will decide, no, I should move to somewhere else. That is how he taught himself. Because in his heart he was looking for something what he was used to before, and he was not getting that anywhere. So he was moving from place to place. That is natural, that unless one finds that fulfillment inside, in one's own spiritual life will not last. You have to feel that fulfillment inside. And that's why, out of these 9 processes Prahlad Maharaj has mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, any of these processes is equally powerful. So this personality, his name was Parameshwar, he went, traveled from one place to another. Parameshwar was a Saraswata Brahmana. And Saraswata Brahmanas in Karnataka, they are general devotees of Krishna. And it is their their succession personalities who moved into Bangladesh later on and to Bengal, who became, and in their families came Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and others. They are Saraswata Brahmanas. They live in the originally they came from a part of Karnataka in the area, and these Saraswata Brahmanas, they were originally devotees of Krishna for many, many years, thousands of years they were Krishna's devotees. So the particular devotee, he travelled all over, and eventually he came home to his place, and then he decided to come to a temple and settle down there. So his desire that he wanted to read Srimad Bhagavatam. That was his only desire, nothing else. He said, it doesn't matter what goes on in this world, it is immaterial, he said to himself. And by going through Vrindavanam and other places, he had developed a deep understanding of the Krishna's childhood pastimes, which attracted him so much. And also through Kurukshetram and other places, he also understood Krishna's, and Dwaraka, he understood Krishna's different activities in these places. All these things was going through his mind. So when he came to this temple, he was so poor, he had nothing with him. All he had with him was one lota as a Brahmana for his washing purposes. He carried a lota with him. He had Srimad Bhagavatam with him, one volume, everything together. And then all that he had was one ghamsha, which he wore all the time, cleaned it up and wore it in a wet form all the time. So that is how he lived. He had nothing else. This was his whole material acquisition. And he came to this temple, and then he spent some time there, not knowing he was trying to do some service in the temple. And in course of time, he became so popular in the temple because of that service nature. All the devotees who came there, they started liking him. And in those days, this incident happened perhaps about 100 years ago, or even less than that. And he became so popular that all the devotees started liking his nature. So in those days, there was not system like this. We had, today we have Today we have traveling facilities to go to big temples. Today we have also facilities for booking different offerings, receiving prasadam in the temple. Everything is streamlined because of the number of devotees who come to these big temples. But those days, these systems were not so organized, unlike today. You have the postal system today where you could send money to the temples by post money orders or by checks and bank accounts and all these things. Nothing existed those days. In those days the system was, people went to the temples, they walked to the temples from long distances. When they arrived at the temple, they will make arrangements for their stay somewhere locally. There were no hotels and restaurants and all that like today. People ate the prasadam from the temple. That was why they came to the temple for. But today you have nowhere. What to talk about anywhere else? Even in Vrindavan you find there are multi-star, five-star halls are going to come up. That's how the plans are made. What to talk about taking prasadam from the temple. And people want all these things. That is, the age is like that. The Kali Yuga is such that after our spiritual life, we need relaxation with television and air conditioner. Otherwise, we can't have our spiritual life. This is the kind of spiritual life we have. That is how much we get the benefit also from our spiritual life. That also you can see. That is why we are struggling with our rounds, chanting, and we are struggling with reading Srimad Bhagavatam. We are struggling with everything. Why? Because our attachment for television and air conditioner in Vrindavan has not gone away. We need all that. And we need also nice prasadam all the three times. And then if there is any time left after that, then that is, we will chance a few rounds. Or we will catch a taxi to go to Radhakund or Govardhan and visit and then appreciate all what we have seen. Take a few photographs and comes back and fly back to New York or Washington or wherever we are. It doesn't matter. But that was not the culture at that time. Because Sattvagunam was very prominent in those days. These are all activities in the mode of passion. Rajogunam, when it is influencing the mind, automatically the devotional activities also will be a reflection of that Rajogunam. Whereas a society where Sattvagunam is prominent and where a society respected simplicity and purity in their life, that society will act in a completely different way. So those days were like that. Because these modern facilities didn't exist those days. So it was a blessing in that way for the human society. And those devotees who came to the temple, they lived their life like that. So Parameshwar also was like that. He had this nature. So generally what he used to do was he used to collect prasadam, all the prasadam, and he used to keep it in one room. They had given him a room at the temple to keep all the prasadam. And as many devotees have come, sometimes due to the restriction in the temple, due to reasons like there's a certain time the deity rooms are open, or sometimes when the devotees arrive, the deities have been put to rest, or you may not have the opportunity to see the deity. At that time they still like to have some prasadam, and they will approach Parameshwar for this prasadam. Parameshwar used to give them prasadam as much as they wanted. He used to keep it for them and give it to them free without charging anything, because he never had any interest in possessing anything and holding anything onto himself. That was the kind of person he was. Simultaneously, he understood that this is the right time for me to read Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is how his life was developed into. When he found that as much as when he had extra time, he utilized it for serving other devotees, collected prasadam, kept it for them. And everybody over a period of time came to know, if we approach Parameshwar, we will get prasadam, even if we don't get it from Krishna. So this type of thinking came to people. And at some stage, it was a competition between Krishna and Parameshwar, who will give more prasadam to the devotees. It has come to that stage that Parameshwar has even beat Krishna in giving prasadam to the devotees. And more interesting than anything else was, in Parameshwar's room, all sorts of prasadams were kept, all sweets, sugar and butter and everything that was offered to Krishna, Parameshwar used to keep it in his room. And people will come there and lavishly Parameshwar used to give it to them. And in that room, not one fly or one ant ever entered. To everybody's surprise, this is what they noticed, that Parameshwar was so casual about it. He left his doors open, not one fly. And all over the room, all prasadam was lying everywhere in pots and pans, everywhere. The furniture, mostly in banana leaves, he kept it open. And most of them were sweets offered to Krishna, and rice offered to Krishna, the vegetables, cooked vegetables and things like that. And also the butter and the yogurt, everything that is offered to Krishna was kept in the pots there. Not ever again one fly entered into that room. Never, not even an ant has entered into that room. That was Krishna's desire, that it was to be like that. So this Parameshwar, he had a desire to read Srimad Bhagavatam 1,000 times. That was his target. He had come to come to the temple and he decided, when do I read Srimad Bhagavatam? Most of the time people are chasing me. So he decided that 3 o'clock in the morning, after he has seen and the all major 5 offerings, he will come and pay his obeisances to Krishna and pray to him very sincerely that I do not get affected by any illness in my lifetime for this. It was his desire. He wanted to complete this reading Srimad Bhagavatam 1,000 times. So normally if you want to read Srimad Bhagavatam, if you devote about 5 to 7, 6